Hello everyone, welcome to the Anger Workshop, our second workshop on the five basic emotions of traditional Chinese medicine. So we will look at anger and how it connects to the body, how it connects to the mind, how it connects to our spiritual practice, and how we can practically approach anger in a way that is functional for us right off the bat. So there's a lot to be said about anger, of course, and there's a lot of studies you can read basically your whole life about the different emotions and how they connect. But this right here is more about, it's an approach, it's a, like a blueprint for you to have it that encompasses the whole spectra of what needs to be, where you need to calm down, what you can strengthen within yourself to be able to cope with it better, how to work on it before it happens, how to deal with it when it comes up, and what to do after it has happened to kind of reassess. But we can jump straight in here and let you be clear as we go along. So this is a practical focus, so we won't go so much into the theory. So with anger, we mean irritation, frustration, resentment. Yeah, everyone's familiar with this. On the other side of anger, we have well-being, flow states, where we are very much in the moment. If we have a creative expression, or if we have involved in some sports or yoga, when we're in the moment, and we're in a good space. And also that we have harmony and vitality in our life overall, long-term. This is like an absence of anger. So the main focus are semi-automatic mechanics. And by that I mean, when anger comes up, what is the first thing that gets disrupted? It's our breathing patterns. As soon as we get angry, we stop breathing correctly. So one of the main things and the main ways to work with anger is to long-term in your life to set breathing patterns as one of your main focuses. Because if you start to become very aware of how you're breathing most of the time, you can notice when you're not breathing well. And this is also one of the main ways to... Yeah, so breathing in general, that when we get angry, we need to learn to bring our breathing pattern back to a pattern that's normal. So that's one of the main keys that we have to bring our any form of strong emotions down. So, and as we're breathing, and as we get angry, also our thoughts are most likely running rampant. So, and thoughts trigger emotions, or emotions trigger thoughts. And this is something that's always ongoing. And to be in our breathing patterns, to have a meditative practice, and to focus more and more in the moment on breathing, with, as we will see later on, with self-observation, it gives us a chance to observe our thoughts and observe our emotions and how they connect to our anger. And I've written feelings here. So a good way to separate feelings and emotions on a practical level, if you're not too familiar with the distinction, is that feelings is the vibration that comes up in your body when you get angry. So something gets stirred in the body, and that is a vibration only, it's a feeling. The difference between a feeling and emotion is that the emotion is your feelings plus the story around it, what's going on. So something comes up and it's because of that person, or it's stress in traffic, or it's something's happening on the job. So we want to bring emotions down to feelings, and once we take thoughts out of the equation, all we're left with are the feelings, and we're no longer stuck in the story of the emotions. And with proper breathing pattern, we bring in one of the key concepts, which is silence. We start to become more silent. We're not constantly talking to ourselves, and the emotions aren't constantly pushing us forward. So you get more of harmony and flow states, and vitality is right there as we breathe more, think less, emotions become feelings, and we can begin self-observation. So that's kind of how that fits together, and it also shows why breathing is so incredibly important, that it's not an unconscious action, but it's a semi-conscious action. You can either breathe and put all your juice in it, or you forget about it and you're still breathing. But you need to have proper breathing patterns where you're breathing very slow, deep down into the stomach, for example. And this is something that if we're not actively doing it on a daily basis or on a moment-to-moment basis, then we need to start setting those breathing patterns. And if we put 2 or 3 weeks into breathing slowly and deeply into the stomach, this then becomes automatic, and it gives you a great cushion for emotions and feelings because you're able to observe because you're calm. So that's a good recommendation on working with anger. Is this is how you prevent so much of the harm that can be caused by the explosions of anger, to focus on the breathing. And if we look at the body, then in traditional Chinese medicine, the liver is what's connected to anger. So of course we can be angry because of thoughts and emotions, but one thing that many people don't know is that if we have a liver in balance, if the liver is not functioning correctly, it begins to stir a vibration that causes anger within you. So you can walk around and think that, oh, I'm very, very angry. But in reality, all you have is a strong liver imbalance. So if you don't know the state of your liver, then it's really good to look at that. Because if you're battling against a liver that's not happy, then you're fighting a dual battle where there's no need. So because it comes up on the inside, we think, oh, it's me, I am angry. It's just your liver is not doing well. And in traditional Chinese medicine, we also have the meridians. Is everyone familiar with the meridians? Know what they are? More or less energy lines that go from, the energy line for the liver goes from inside of the toe all the way up here to the groin, through the, what's it called?
Solar plexus.
Solar plexus. And up in the liver. And then it goes up to the eyes, over the eyes, and then up over the right frontal cortex. So what happens if you have a liver imbalance is that this vibration of anger travels up. So you're feeling this anger in the liver, and you're walking around being annoyed or irritated. It travels up here, up, and it goes into, first to the mouth. So you begin to speak from anger. So if you have a compulsive and you say angry things, it can be the liver expressing itself, because that vibration travels there. And then it travels up to the eyes. So you're walking around feeling angry or annoyed, and you're going, what is that thing that's annoying me? There it is. And your eyes start to look for things that it doesn't like. And then it travels up there to the right frontal cortex. And the right frontal cortex is, that's the voice in the head. Like when you have an internal dialogue and you're talking to yourself a lot, it comes from the right frontal cortex. And most or many scientific studies that have come out lately on this topic, what they've realized is that the structure and the construction of this vibration coming up and in, out through the right frontal cortex is 90% negative or repetitive. So you're basically thinking over and over the same thoughts and the same structure, and it's judgmental. It highlights what's, it's like a glass is half empty, always. And it keeps on going as long as the liver imbalance is there. So as you, if you can look in society, and we look at other people around us first, and we don't observe ourselves, it's quite easy to see how this is constantly going on with pretty much everyone that we know. And this is why meditation is so a spiritual practice, is to get this voice to kind of calm down. And but many people meditate and do a lot of yoga and spiritual work, and they cannot get this thing to stop. Then it can be because of the liver imbalance. So this is how it travels. And if we look at the way we used to live life maybe 10,000 years ago is so incredibly different from the way we live today. Diet, information, traveling, all of this kind of stuff. And it's not sure that the body is really built for it, especially if we're not actively taking care of it, and we don't realize that this is what's going on the inside. So if you're in Chiang Mai or living in the Chiang Mai area, for example, it's really good to go see your local traditional Chinese medicine doctor, because what they will do is they will heal you with herbs. So they use herbs to stimulate the organs, and they check what's going on inside. And you don't have to hit yourself with really strong medicines from allopathic medicine. So it's part of this is also to introduce people to Chinese medicine. There's in Wild World Market, for example, you know, there's a really good Chinese doctor here. And detox is also something that can be really good to focus on the liver and the kidneys, for example. So it's we're lucky that for us that live here that we have this readily available. But and the way that they work is that they work on the vibrational frequencies in the body or the qi. So qi, if you're, I guess everyone's heard of this now, this is what they're working on. So they're finding balance and harmony within the body of the yin and yang qi. And when you get that, a lot of these irritation frequencies within the body start to go away. So that's a very physiological way of working on your any frustration, anger, irritation before we move down to things that have to do more with self observation and the ego and the social. So there's a lot to be said and a lot to be done on a mechanical level that doesn't really have anything to do with your personality or anything like that yet. So a little bit different way of working. And then, of course, self-observation. When you work with anger, and this, I was a mindset coach and kind of life coach for professional poker players for many years. And one of the big things was you had to stop yourself before you got angry. You can't wait until you get angry, because if you get angry, then you start playing really poorly and you start to lose a lot of money. So they had a lot of really strong incentive to work on their selves, work on their ego, work on the social, so that to prevent anger and to minimize the impact of anger. So one of the biggest things with that anger and self-observation is to look for your own cues. And that is, for example, what are your bodily tells? So for me, it's always, if I start to bounce my leg, I know that, okay, something's up. You know, maybe you're doing this or you're doing that, or you start to shake or you feel like, to notice subconscious cues of what's going on with you, so that you go, oh, I'm a little bit annoyed enough right now and I didn't even notice it, but my body is agitated. What's going on here? So if you start to learn this self-observation and really pay attention to what's going on with yourself as part of your meditative practice, and also when you're out and about, then you have a real chance of spotting yourself. And as soon as you find one of these things that you do subconsciously, they become conscious, you increase your awareness, and you have a really good chance of improving your ability to halt yourself before you can, the train gets running too strong. Same thing with thoughts. Self-observation of how am I thinking and what am I thinking about. Because the right frontal cortex is so repetitive, it's quite easy to figure out what are my biggest preoccupations. What are the things that worry me? Where are my concerns? Where is this? And if you are able to point out these three things, for example, that you're most often thinking about negatively, then you can stop yourself. Okay, I'm thinking about this again. Okay, I'm thinking about that again. Oh, here's this story again. That's a big part of breaking the anger down and see where the growing ground is. Self-observation of thoughts. And we talked about emotions. Same thing here. What particular emotion and what particular feeling is the thing that starts off the whole? Because when you're angry, it might be this whole big thing. But it started like this really small thing here. We need to catch ourselves over here.
There's no waiting for the big impact here. That's too late. So taking a lot of responsibility and putting a lot of juice in self-observation is a really, really good idea. Same thing with habits. Wants, needs, desires. Where do we go? Who do we hang out with? How do we spend our time? All of this is really a key crucial point to bringing the awareness up of how we're doing so we can halt ourselves. And all we really need to do is observe. We don't really need to do many active changes, because there's a shamanic saying, if you have a deficiency or a problem, if you notice it or when you notice it, 50% is done already. And it will slowly, slowly begin to fade away. So bringing the quote-unquote light of awareness into your life and into self-observation and making it a priority, that's where, if not all, but most of the work is done. Because without that, we don't really have any way to address these issues. Familiars, family, friends, loved ones, co-workers. They are really good for us in this sense, because we can also observe them, observe other people's habits. And what we see in others is also what we need to work on, because there's recognition. So, for example, family patterns. What if we look at four people in our family and they all have the same trait, it's pretty likely we also have that same trait. You know, so law of deduction, and co-workers, how we get affected on our workplace, what kind of habits and things we take on. It's really, really good to figure out what we're doing ourselves on a subconscious level. But this comes into self-observation of how do I relate to my environment. Pay attention. That's really a big key. Not spacing out too much in the head and really being in the moment. If we're going to work on anger, we've got to go a little bit deeper. And that means stay focused on what you're doing and not how much are we on the phone, how much are we kind of doing this day-to-day, what we call our own nonsense. You know, when we're just mindlessly doing stuff. Meditation in action. It's really good to have a meditative practice, to sit down a couple of minutes or 20 minutes or an hour, whatever you feel that you need every day to ground yourself, to calm yourself, to feel what's going on inside of the skin. That's a really powerful practice. But also, when I have many friends that are fantastic meditation teachers, they can sit there for hours and I can see that they're loving it, right? And then they walk up and then you go, they're off again. Like, they cannot bring what they practice into the marketplace. They go to 7-Eleven and someone cuts in front of them, and they're super annoyed. So they aren't able to bring what they're doing into their daily life, basically, when they're active and they're not sitting down and trying to be still. So self-observation in your daily life. Connected to your meditative practice, if you have one. If you don't have one, I really recommend for you to start doing that. Okay, so that's a bit about the main focus, the practical focus, self-observation, body and semi-auto mechanics. So now let's move on to some subtler and more interesting things, and maybe a little bit more confrontational things for oneself. Because let's look a little bit about what is it that's really struggling with anger. What's really struggling with anger is our ego. It's our social ego. And by that I mean the way that we talk to ourselves about the world, that is the way we look at the world. And if we talk to ourselves and look at the world in a way we often get angry, there's something up with the internal dialogue. And the internal dialogue is very often protecting the social self. By the social self, I mean, when you're born, you're kind of born as an empty slate. And then we learn how to live, and we learn how to talk, and we learn how to act, and we build a personality, and we become the person that we are now. And that person has a very particular way of relating to the world. And knowing the connection between how you talk to yourself about the world and your ego is really a key point to realizing how and what it is that makes you angry. And if we're able to own this part of things, what we're really doing is that we're bringing all the power back to ourselves. When I worked with the poker players, for example, around the poker table, it was everybody was trying to make the other person angry. Because if you get angry, or you get angry, you get angry when we play about money, it's great for me. So it's a different ball game. And then if it's random events, it doesn't really change much. You still don't want to get angry. You want to be calm, rise above, you know, be the bigger man or the bigger woman. You know, that's what we want to do. But it's not as easy, right? So if we take the social ego as a concept and look at it, that gives us a lot of ability to work around the things that actually annoy us. So we're bringing the, how to get our juice back. And when it comes to it, attitude is everything. Because the easiest thing we can do is to point the finger outside. As soon as we're pointing this finger outside, okay, there's nothing we can do. Because the problem is outside. Right? So, and knowing that if our attitude is not one that's serving us, it's really, really easy to change the attitude. But most people don't think like this. They think like, oh, I have an attitude, or this is my attitude. If it's not serving you, just change it. It's easy. Maybe it takes some time to bring it around, but knowing that it can be done and that you can adapt any attitude, that's a really big one, because that means that it's a matter of choice, and it's not only a this is how I am, you know, that, because we very easily get stuck in the story of me. So for example, the story of me says, I come from here, this is my name, I'm this and that and that, and I, yeah, this is an example. You wake up and you start at place X and you're going to place Y, and on the road there, you're going to stop at place Z and pick up something, and that's my day, and this is what I want to do. And then, as we're walking along here, someone else comes along, and we have a conflict. This person is not nice, they're rude, we're rude, something happens, and then anger comes. If we look at it from like an isolated event, then it was just something that happened. But if we already know that, okay, this is absolutely coming today. This is coming, and I need to prepare myself and know that I am not going to get stuck so much in the story of what's happening with me. Instead, I'm going to try to be very present and anticipate that things are coming my way, and I need to prepare for it. That pulls us out of the social ego story, so we're not just living unconsciously. We become much more aware of what am I trying to do? I'm trying to work on my anger now. Okay, so that's the main directive, the priority. Instead of the story of myself going here, 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 here. And this has to do with internal dialogue again, turning that off and becoming more present. So, because what really happens is that in the story of me and the egos, journey through life is that we begin to build up slowly this anger. Small things, small things, small things become bigger and bigger and bigger. Of course, sometimes something major happens in the moment, but most of the time it needs a growing ground, and we begin to build this big bad wolf either inside or someone else outside, or a concept or an idea or whatnot. And this whole thing here, It all builds up into this big bad thing. So knowing that, we have to work and look a bit on the owning the social ego, the internal dialogue and the attitude. It makes it possible for us to really chop down and not add on to this, building this big storm cloud in the horizon. So that's where we really want to be. Because I will see later how this connects to our attachment. But the ego's problems are big and grand. The power and powerlessness is a big one when it comes to anger. And the real thing that triggers ego in and around anger a lot is fear. So we did a workshop already on fear. So if you want to listen to that and go a little bit more to the core of what is triggering your anger, a lot of the time it's fear. And a lot of the time anger is our way to try to get feel powerful when we are actually feeling powerless. So if we don't think that we have control of the situation, we want to take control and we get angry. But it's kind of a useless reaction because it doesn't do anything. It makes us feel very powerful, but it doesn't change anything. But knowing that when we're angry and we start to act in a very powerful way, it's because we're actually feeling powerless. And that's really good because when we start to look inside with self-observation, and if we bring it into a spiritual context, your powerlessness is actually your real power. Because that's where all the self-observation takes place. So we want to, the ego wants to control the situation and what's going on in the social, and we can't let things go. We can't leave things be because of our attachments of what's going on in our immediate environment. And this power of anger that we enforce on our environment is, we're trying to make ourselves right. We want to be right, and that feels really good. It's really good to be right. Unfortunately, being right in these kind of situations very rarely makes us happy. So if we, knowing that, we, to allowing other people to be right in our life, it allows us to be very happy. So if we're working on our anger and we have a lot of attachments or that we want to control, and that's where our anger comes from a spiritual perspective, and all spiritual teachers talk about losing your attachment and so on. Here we have very practical examples of, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Because being right and being righteous, those two things are just so very, very close. So we're back again after a short break that you haven't been aware of, but we have two Chinese tour buses outside that are making a bit of noise, so please don't be angry at our beautiful Asian friends. But yeah, we left off with being right or being happy. So make sure that you're not being right for righteousness' sake and allowing yourself to have the opportunity to be happy instead. And now we're going to move down to the next topic, which is to be triggered, which is a very hot topic these days. It's a new word, it hasn't really been around so much from the country of origin where I came from. I had never heard of it really, and then in the last maybe 5-10 years, and within social media, this is a very, very big thing. So, if we want to work on our anger, to be triggered is the worst thing. And by being triggered, I don't mean to get upset because what someone says. But when we say, you triggered me, what does that mean? It means that I'm a big button and you can trigger me. And it's not my responsibility and now I'm a victim. That's what happens when we say, you triggered me. The origin of the word trigger is triggered trauma. So when people came started coming back from war, they had these massive reactions from small things happening. So we've talked about trigger trauma connected to PTSD. But what happened in the social media world is that we just leave the trauma, take the trigger, as soon as I get upset, it's you. So you can blame someone outside and you're not allowing you any chance to take responsibility for what comes up. So we don't want to be, ever want to be triggered, but we love to be offended. Chinese friends are leaving. Give it a second. There's actually three buses. Yeah, so we want to do everything we can to never allow ourselves or have the attitude that we are triggered. But we do get upset, so instead we choose to say that we get offended. Why would we want to say that we get offended, even if this other person is obviously being very not nice? Because when we get offended, that means that there's something in me that I need to work on. It changes your attitude and it brings all the power back to now it's my responsibility. You are willingly taking all the responsibility for your anger back into your life. And that's a bit annoying maybe to bear at first, but it's a real self-empowerment move. And the only person that can make that change of adjustment is you. So the stronger you are on this point and the less you allow yourself to say that I was triggered, the more power to you.
Really?
Of course, if there is real trauma and you actually have some PTSD and you're getting triggered, that's a different kind of ballgame. Then you have to be very, very savvy about who you hang out, back to habits again, what your want, needs and desires are, and where you are, who you're with, and what you're doing. Absolutely crucial, because if you're not actively dealing with your trauma and healing and know what all the treatments are, what's the new way of doing it, what's the best, where's the local person in my area that can help me with this thing, you have to be on top of these things. It's other way, there's you're going to be stuck in this loop of not being happy. And so that's a bit about, and if you like this idea of being offended, then you can look at your familiars, which would be a lot of the people that do offend you, make you upset. What can we do? As soon as someone makes us upset, we can say, thank you, you're showing me what I need to work on. That's only a choice of attitude. We can do that, or we can say, I was triggered, you're the problem, and then we're stuck. So just know that there is things that can be done even in a harsh and unfair and sometimes difficult world. But so the next thing I wanted to talk about is mirroring and self-reflection, which connects well to being offended. And that is that when we get upset with someone, what we're doing is that most of the time we are projecting what we are feeling inside onto the other person, meaning that what we see in another person, we have to have had experience with or working, dealing with ourselves. Otherwise, there would be no recognition. It would be alien behavior for us. So knowing this, and that self-reflection is always going on, it means that what we see is what we need to work on. That is really, really a key. So when we're looking at familiars, or even better, strangers, and we see that, I bet I see this in this person, I see that in that person. Go inside. That's where you need to go. You need to work on that trait. Just pretend that it's true, and you will be able to deal with, if not all, most of the things that are going on with you. But this is, you're basically painting yourself into a corner. So when I was working with poker players, mainly young men between 20 and 30, extremely intelligent, very active minds, and not very social, because everyone's sitting inside. With them, you had to paint them into this corner where there's no way out. You have to do it. It has to be your responsibility. It's the only way. It can't be. Otherwise, you're just giving money, time, and energy away. So that's how these kind of mirroring things came up. Like what you see in another is what you haven't worked out in yourself yet. Make that like a statement and a truth, and you have an unlimited source of self-improvement in your own life that you can draw from. Victim mentality. That is part of being triggered and the mirroring and the self-reflection. And it's really a difficult one, right? If we're feeling like a victim, we have to learn to take that responsibility. It's the only way. When we're feeling down and we're not feeling strong and we feel that we're stuck, just pack on more responsibility. You can handle it, right? But you have something to work on. You have something to climb over, something to dig out. More responsibility, more things that you can do. That's really the way out. It's not... Yeah, there's really no other way around that one. And having talked about the social ego and the ego's problems, what is the most common response that I've, from my experience, that you get from this? It's the yes but game. So I say, oh, you can do this and you can do that. And you hear, yes but. Yes but. The yes but game says, for every solution I have, the person has another problem. And it's infinite. And what does the yes but game do? It's taking no responsibility and allowing ourselves to continue as we already did. So when realize that and pay attention to that, we're not doing that. If we have one, two, or three, or four things that we can actively add into our lives, make sure that you're not doing the yes but game. Yeah, this is not going to work because it's Tuesday, or this is not going to work because, you know, whatever excuse that is. Look for what your excuses are and be very clear on that. So that you're not holding yourself back in that sense. Okay, so that's a lot about the heaviness. So what is another practical way out? So you can imagine that removing anger from your life is one thing. So let's say that we have anger and then we remove it and then we're left with nothing. But we can also work on activation in the body and not just calming. So what is it that we want to activate? If we look at acupressure, for example, which is working on the energy points and the meridians in the body, when they work on anger, it's not necessarily that they're working on the anger meridian, which would be the intuitive thing. What they're doing is that when we get angry, it's very easy to give someone the middle finger, right? Why are we doing that? Because this is connected to the heart, to the pericardium, the membrane that's around the heart. And if we activate that one, we are activating our heart, which is dissolving the anger. So there's also that side to it, to activate body consciousness, to activate other chakras. And we have another way to work on anger. So this way we have a dual approach. We're working on removing the negative, but also activating the positive. So if you ever get angry, one first thing is to grab your finger and just squeeze it really hard. And that begins to activate your heart chakra, and it will melt off and bring you out of your head and down into your heart. If you connect it to the breathing even stronger, this is really good for small annoyances. What if we're getting really angry? On both sides of the middle finger, by the side of the nail. If you squeeze there, you can just try it by the nail. When you get angry, squeeze. The anger will start to go away. If it doesn't work, just squeeze harder. Just keep on squeezing, and it will take your anger away. Because you won't be able to focus, because the heart is activating, and it's a super easy and very silly technique, but it's very, very effective, right? And this is something you can see in poker players. They're having their hands under the table, they're doing that, they're not going to show anyone else that they're doing that, because they don't want anyone to know that. So that's giving away information like that. And you just move between these and return to the silence, observe your thoughts, and you go inside and just don't let it erupt. That's like a last minute, you're holding the line, like, No Viking charge here. We're gonna stand firm. so that's something to. We'll talk about some more acupressure points. But this one is really, really good because you can control this one and do this one all the time. So what happens when we're squeezing the finger? Well, it allows for us to bring our balance back. And what is the first cue? We connect this one to balance in breath. Comfortable breathing, slow and calm, and it will start to bring heart rate down, it will start to bring the body tension down. And when we squeeze our hand like that, so So let's greet, if everybody does this for like 5 seconds, and then let go, and then hold your hands out like this, and just look at your hands. It's very easy to feel the bioelectromagnetic energy in the hand. So it's like a slight tingling, it's like a slight form of electricity. This is your qi. This is what they're talking about. When you see people doing qigong and everything in the park, they're starting to work on this energy. And what are they really doing? They're moving their awareness from the mind, where they're thinking, and pulling it down into their body consciousness. So as soon as you put your awareness on your hands, you're basically not doing things in your head. If you're also paying attention to your hands and your feet at the same time, your mind really goes silent. This is a very easy meditation, because what you want to do is to build this body consciousness throughout your whole body. And you will be able to access what they call the second brain, which is the gut brain, which is where all intuition is going on, much, much quicker and faster than the active mind. And if we want to be in flow states, or be very present and be very creative and be very motivated, if we bring the awareness from the mind down into the body, either by feeling the hands, or if it's a crisis, holding the finger or pushing here, what we're really doing is that we're turning the mind off. The story goes away about what's going on. And that's where so much of the anger is. It's because of how we're talking ourselves with ourselves about the thing. What? An example. I'm sitting here, a person sitting there, and that's it. But if it's the story of, here's me, there's my employer, and we're talking about this or this or this or that, then if that story is going on, then it's a huge problem. And you pull this, but and it's gone, and you're just sitting there, and you're in the moment. And you're exactly where the spiritual teachers in the world, that where they wanted you to go. In poker we call it to be in your A game, where you are taking everything in, but you're not processing everything in the correlation to yourself as, who am I, what's my story, have I just lost money, have I just won money, where should I be at? This is all gone, and you're only being very attentive and present. You'd be a very much better hunter if you were doing this, a better fisherman. If you have any creative endeavors, some writing or yoga or whatever that may be, you want to turn the mind off. Writer's block, what is that? Too much thinking and not being in the moment. Playing sports, you don't want to talk to yourself as you're doing things. You want to be in it. You want to be in it to kind of win it. So the activation of our body consciousness is a really, really strong thing. And the less body consciousness we have, the harder it's going to be for us to break out of anger, because otherwise we have to break out of anger conceptually and intellectually. But we're still working the same mind, and the same internal dialogue is going on that's creating all the problems. So this activating of body consciousness, and we'll talk a little bit more about the chakras and so on. And it's also an invitation to, if you aren't familiar with really with these terms, it's a really good thing to research, because there's so much information about this out now and how you can work with this. Another way to activate your body consciousness is, there's one line here that says, smiling babies. So if you, a newborn baby smiles around 200 or 250 times per day or something like this. You know, they're just smiling all the time, right? And their body consciousness is fully active when you're born. A depressed person might smile 5 times or less in a day. And that one we can understand. But the funny thing is, if you are happy and smile, your body becomes strong and full of vitality. But if you're unhappy and smile, your body still gets the same reaction. All you have to do is fake smile to yourself, and your body won't know the difference. So it's like a catch-22, where you can mechanically override your body and the way that you're feeling, or if you're unhappy. It's just, you smile a lot. If you can put a reminder on your phone that goes off every 5 minutes, and you smile those 5 minutes, it'll change everything. Because your body will think, everything is all right. We are doing really good. It doesn't matter where you are, really. It's funny. That's why, for example, here in Thailand, when I came here, I realized, like, wow, I'm never smiling. Everybody smiles and they're happy and, you know, kind of. I just wasn't doing that. And now I can go long periods in the periods of time during the day not smiling. But sometimes I catch myself and just go. And it's funny because it really does work. And it takes the seriousness out of our daily day, and we can practice it. And if you have a partner or a loved one, and you can sit and just smile like a moron, and yeah, you'll bring both of your energies up. So smiling babies is a good reminder. Yeah, back to some acupressure points. Another one that is quite common, if someone's angry and frustrated, what do we naturally do? This is a very common one. We've seen this so many times. What are we doing instinctively, intuitively? We're going towards the third eye point. And the third eye activation point means that we will get another perspective of what's going on that is a bit more holistic, or from a higher, our higher self is a little bit more involved. But how do we do it mechanically? And we know that liver is connected with anger in Chinese medicine, and it's the point right here. So this is a natural, common, and in Thailand, everybody knows about these kind of stuff. But for me as a Westerner, I didn't know this. You can take a picture of this with your cell phone later if you want, and then look at, if you have a problem in any of these points, then you just massage these points, and they will activate the energy lines that will stimulate that organ. And it's not a quick fix solution, but knowing this, and you can even track your face and feel where, oh my God, I'm really, really tense here. What's that? So number 8. Oh, that's the lungs. Okay, lungs, that's connected to grief. Oh my God, I have grief going on? So you can backtrack and work around this in a very, 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 very intuitive way. But for anger in particular, I'll leave that here. You can look how it connects to the ears, and you can massage them. There's a lot of cool stuff that you can do with that. But for liver and anger in particular, right here, and you can massage very easily. And you can do this when you're out too, it's easy. You know, you can, if you're getting it out, you can hide it a little bit. But if you have time, what you really want to do is you want to look up like this, straight up, while you're massaging. But you can do it with your eyes closed, and you want to look, it's freaky. So you massage there and look up, and you're bringing your awareness to this point, and it also allows you to stop thinking. And you, oh, it's just, and you're pushing, so it feels very comfortable. Oh, that's lovely. And then you can connect it with the other finger here, and you're doing two things at once. I guess everyone's familiar with chakras, the chakra system, you know, going up along the spine from the root to the crown. In the Chinese, they talk about something else called dantians. And the dantians are three main energy points in the body. One is the lower dantian that I'll talk a little bit more about, which is three fingers below the belly button. For women, it's the place inside of the womb. For men, it's between, yeah, same position. But and the dantians are often called cauldrons. That's where all the energies merge, and that's where they land. So the cauldron together with the chakras feed the energy and the chi through the meridian system, basically. So to put your awareness and your breath and connect it to the lower dantian is extremely powerful. It brings you out of the mind and down to a low part in your body. And in South America, in most of the shamanic practices that don't work so much with plant medicines, they call this area the place of will. All your will is down here. So they say that with this will and patience, you build anything that you want in your life. But if you feel the feeling of breathing down there, you become very, very clear. This is a really good, martial artists are extremely good to be in this position right here, because it makes you grounded, it makes you strong, it makes you powerful to be here. And so to breathe there and always, it's almost like stretching your awareness down, and then it'll go up again, and then down and up again, but eventually it'll connect here, and then you become way, way stronger. For the women, if we want to add in the chakras, inside of the womb is like the second, third eye, So if you're doing a lot of deep meditation or spirit journeys or something like that, know that there's a lot of power to be unlocked from inside of the lower dantian. The second dantian, where the chi goes, feeds up to the heart dantian right here, where there's all the photonic energy pulses out through the entire body, and then it goes up to the third eye area, and that's where they call in Chinese the Shen, which is the spirit. So your spirit connection is connected to the foundation of the lower dantian up to the heart. So to overcome anger on a social level or in our personal life, if our heart chakra would be fully activated, that would make us able to see through anything, be more loving and be more kind, and everything would be very easy to deal with. But how do we activate the heart chakra? Well, practically, in the connection to anger is that if we're angry at ourselves or another person, the way out is always forgiveness. That's the first thing. If we can forgive the other, we drop our attachments and we let things go. If we can do that, let it solve. Then, of course, it's in our lives, it might not be that easy, but knowing that that's the doorway, and without forgiveness, it's going to be much longer than it needs to be. If there's no forgiveness, it might take you 3 years to get over something. But if there's forgiveness there, it might take you 3 months, even though it's been bothering you for a very, very long time. So if someone has wronged you, forgive them. And if you've wronged someone else, apologize. If we do that, then we are basically out of... Our heart chakra will love it, and it will begin to spin, and it will begin to feel it. And once you begin to feel it, it begins to grow, and you'll have another view on things. You're not as easily impacted. You become more creative, more motivation. All of this kind of begins to stir on the spiritual level. But it's quite mechanical in the way that we do activate it. And if forgiveness isn't there for you yet, then maybe acceptance is. Just realize, okay, this is the way it is. I can't change it, and this is the way... This is what's happening. Because if there is no acceptance, what we really aren't accepting is the way things actually are. So it's, in poker it was the same thing too. It was the last card, you were 95% chance to win, and that one card came and then you lost. And people, and me too, exploded in anger. What does that mean? Here's the way things are, and then there's the absolute non-acceptance of that card. Stupid reality right there. And explosion, right? So acceptance is a real key that can be the small thing where you bring the forgiveness in. And if we, what do we do if we can't accept? Okay, then we might feel that we're really stuck. I cannot accept this thing. So what do we do? Can we accept that we cannot accept? Yeah, I can do that. See, we brought a little bit of acceptance in. Create a little gap. And then we stick a little bit more to it, then a slight of forgiveness, and then we work that way. Just accept that we cannot accept it. That's enough. And then let time kind of heal that and move it a little bit. Allow for the spirit to come in and give us some insight, whatnot. But we work with what we have. And if we don't have much, okay, that's fine, but we start there. But the attitude is, I'm gonna do the little thing that I can. Yeah. Let's see how long we've been talking. Maybe an hour and 15. Yeah, I want to just mention spirituality as something. And that's very... what I mean by spirituality, what spirituality means to you. It's very individual. But the cultivation of awareness, self-awareness as a concept, and becoming more and more self-aware, that is going to work any form of spiritual practice really, really well. So there's a lot of beautiful things going on here, especially in Chiang Mai, where you can go and you can work on all the positive stuff. But unfortunately, when we throw a workshop like this, there's not that many people that show up that are willing to work on the dirty side of town, right? On the net, things that are a bit more negative, because there's a lot of things going on with the bliss, and there's a lot of going on with the higher and the feel good. But this kind of work of digging deep and accepting this and working on this is extremely, extremely powerful and rewarding. So if you want to increase your awareness, you need to go where it's not comfortable. And this is one of the areas where it's not very comfortable, but really, really rewarding. So any kind of work that you do on this, pat yourself on the shoulder, because most people are not touching this with a 10-foot pole. Really, they're still going to go outside. And the more that you work on this, the more you will see it that's going on around you, and you will notice where other people are stuck. And then they become your teachers. How are they your teachers? They're showing you what not to do, which is maybe a little bit harsh, but it's very true. And if you bring family and friends and loved ones into this, yeah, it's not always the easiest to see, but that's where we're at. I wanted to mention briefly about the inner child. That's something that's also very, very modern topic now, and people talk a lot about this. And a crash course to the inner child from a shamanic perspective is that the inner child is what is combined of a yin and a yang, a male and a female part. And that is the balance of your heart chakra. And what determines this? This is a real easy exercise. You don't have to do it right now because it can be a little bit emotional. But the way to see where your heart chakra and your inner child is, it's very, very simple. You sit down and you calm, you're just in a good space for you, and you bring up the memory of your parents. The first 1, 2, 3 memories that come up, the emotion within that, the setting, the feeling in and around it, that's where your inner child is going to be. Very easy. And then to working on resolving these things through forgiveness and working on this, and the relationship to this is really powerful, because if they are, for example, and I brought up the first memory of my parents, it was them fighting over a kitchen table. Okay, that means that I'm arguing on the inside. As soon as I realized this, that was the solution to the whole thing. I could much easier start working. But to know that this is a dynamic that is within the heart chakra. So if you're in the spiritual and want to open the heart chakra, that's a really, really good place to start. And it's quite simple. It doesn't matter if they're still here or if they have moved on. You can still work on this in a very easy way. I wrote intentions here. And if you want to open the heart chakra, realize that you can't hide anything from the inner child, basically. Where your intentions are and what you are intending behind the scenes, where nobody else knows, the inner child is watching. So if your intentions are not clear, your heart will not open. That's basically a shortcut to how the intentions connect to the heart chakra. And intentions, yeah, they will be as good and as clear and as serving for you and your path as you're willing to put the bar, basically. Because it's only you there, and it's you with you, and we have a very short time in this life. I mean, death is waiting for us all to invite us in for the last party, and then that's what's going. Our intentions play a major role into opening up ourselves mechanically on the spiritual path. And the rapture of the heart. The heart chakra is the main chakra in the center of the body. It gives stability and the ability to balance all the other chakras out. So living on a walking a path of heart, where you're going where your heart needs you to go, that's really powerful for you. And following that, the more you can follow it without compromise, definitely the better your journey will be. If you follow some of the other chakras, if you're 2 in the crown or 2 in the root, it'll become a different journey for you. But if you follow the heart, it will be able to balance and give you a very good mix of all of them. But opening the heart chakra, it means that there's a lot of empathy that will open up. So opening the heart chakra is definitely not comfortable, because as a society and as a planet, we are not doing too good. I think that's pretty easy to see. So the more the heart chakra opens up, things, we begin to feel our surroundings. So we start to feel better with it, but however, we begin to feel how other people are doing more. And that can be hard. So being, that's why the a warrior's path of heart, to be strongly walking and allowing for this to happen and realize that it's either that or going back to sleep, spiritually speaking, is that the things, that's our the path that we can choose. That also means that we can easily see, feel where we need to go. We can use the discomfort spiritually of knowing, I really don't want to face this fear. Oh, I really don't want to work on this. Oh, I know it's good for me. That feeling, that's your sweet spot right there. That's your compass for true north for you. And you are the one that notices whether that's true for you. But if you're stuck in a way and things are not working for you, maybe you need to be more diligent and true to yourself in that specific area. And yeah, it's each to their own, and everyone's unique, and it's a lot of generalizations, but it's each person's feeling process of doing this kind of work. Yeah, I think that's what I wanted to say about this. I think, yeah. Thank you very much, and if anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to or for us to juggle some questions around. That'd be cool. Could turn up and move.
Sure, I have one question actually. When it comes to comfort zone and attitude, that's one that I get as a coach a lot, because you want a positive attitude, but you still want to work in the areas which is not comfortable. But it's easy to go to the negative attitude while you're in an area that's not comfortable. How can you kind of hold your bearings when you go there?
It's easy to find that feeling of a sweet spot. You can call it the balance between joy and anguish. When you're in there and the feeling is max, that's where you want to be. It's like growing pains, spiritual growing pains. You're right in there between where you're in the pocket. You're where it's happening. It's where things are going on. And that's what we're going for. We're looking for activation. But for sure, it's a fine balance. And if we fall and we fall on our face, that's fine. That's fine. The attitude is just get up and we do it again. And we do it again and we do it again and we do it again. And that's really the key and the way out of that one. The sweet spot between joy and anguish.
Thank you.
Isn't there something like a healthy anger that needs to be expressed?
A what?
A healthy anger?
Healthy anger?
That needs to be expressed?
Certainly. I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I forgot about that. When we talk about anger, there is a way to channel it in a healthy way. I think that for most people, it's easiest to do it in a controlled environment at first, where you're perhaps alone and perhaps writing or painting any form of art, or there's certainly a way to channel that anger into something that's constructive for you. Though it's a very difficult thing, because when we bring in other people, it's like we're trying to channel gasoline, and other people are like candle flames. So if they come too close, we just explode. So when we do decide to work on this anger, make sure it's a safe space, make it a Sarah and Simba have a beautiful shrine here, or with all different kinds of spiritual things. It's to set the ambiance. So if you work on these things, you do it here. And for the men, have a yang space at home, where it's like, dude, it's my yang space. And here's, if I work on something, this is what I do. Yeah, for you it's the gym, for me it's a little, another different kind of setup. But then we have a space where, like, when I do my work, this is where I do my work. Yeah, for the women, that you also have your yin space, where you set a space for you, like, this is where I do my work, this is where I hold my space, this is where I'm safe, this is where it's cool, this is where I can go deep. And for me as a Westerner, that's something completely new. I've never really done that. I worked with other coaching and therapies and so on, one-on-one, but I never really set that, took the time to believe in the mumbo-jumbo, the spiritual setting, holding your space like that. But now, when I've had a little bit more experience, it makes a lot more sense. So that we create an environment that really supports us. Yeah. And then we can do a lot of this deep work, but usually it's a passion that we're running for, I think. And if we have family or loved ones that we have conflict with and so on, to write letters to them. We don't need to send them, but to write it out, to get it out, to put a picture of them and make it the ambiance is right, and just write your heart out, you know, like a burn it later expression. So especially for us guys, right, we know if there's something we don't learn is to work on our emotions. It's really difficult because we kind of stuck with the hand that we're dealt. And how do we fold it, how we get it out is to, you can work one-on-one with people with coaching, but in reality, you can do, there's techniques to do all of it yourself. You don't really need the guidance. If you have the opportunity to do it, even better. But doesn't mean that if the opportunities aren't there, that you don't have a chance to do it. So, and that's really good to know. Thank you. Okay, feels like we're done for today. I want to thank Sarah and Simba for holding the space so lovely.
Very nice. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. And we got some other workshops coming up, maybe some stress and some other.
Yeah, we will cover all the main emotions, and we will also cover stress. Stress is a big one. I've been suffering from struggling with stress from my previous life in the corporate world before I came here. So yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, so if you're only passing through and you don't have a chance to come again, then you can check in on the podcast and follow up on what's going on here if you like. Easy. We have the Facebook group. Easy to join and stay updated.
Thank you.
Thank you.